So how are we going to start this? So as I was saying before, so what I'll do is I will do, I'll nick one of Rob's old MIDIs, and then we'll do an introduction, and then we'll just start. Okay, so should we do a click? After three? One, two, three. Hello, and welcome to the first Chips of Chorlton podcast. My name is Neil, and I will regularly be joined by my friends, Dutch Uncles, to discuss all the goings-on in the music world and also review the quality of the local chips. This week, I am joined in my living room by Robin, Andy and Duncan, and we'll discuss Record Store Day, the Cortinas and the Free Chip Butties at Bar 480. Firstly, we'll discuss Spotify and its $26 billion flotation on the New York Stock Exchange.
Spotify, yeah, I don't know, I quite like it as a consumer. But I guess we're all sort of conflicted by the consumer versus artist thing about it.
Yeah.
Because it pays so very badly, and yet it's now the most valuable.
How much have you earned off Spotify in your career?
No idea.
Well, we had the cynically titled A Million Plays and Not a Penny Paid tour.
Yes.
What tour was that? Where did we go? The Flexin was the one that had a million plays.
Yeah.
An issue I have with it is that it's quite, it's sort of distracting in the sense that you see a track like Flexin that's had over a million plays and you think, oh wow, okay, that's a million plays, that's a lot, this band must be a lot bigger, or you know, this band must be of a certain size to get a million plays. It's not the case. A lot of the time when you see a song that has millions and millions of plays, but then all the other songs on that band's profile are kind of a bit more accurate, right, is because they've just been put on the right playlists. It all comes down to what playlist your song gets put on.
Yeah,
so there's already a system there
to
manipulate, I think, certainly for the bigger artists.
There's a big criticism of Spotify that didn't they, with their most subscribed playlist, that they'd commissioned writers to write songs fitting the briefs of the playlists, and have just paid them a certain amount of money to do that and don't give them any future royalties. So it's almost like library music in the sense if you write, you can write tunes for their playlists, and you know, basically the Spotify people listen to it.
Mm, that's astonishing.
Never made a profit, Spotify.
Well, that's bollocks.
I know, it's nuts, isn't it? Worth 25 billion, they've never made a profit.
Right.
Is that the same sense that Nigel Farage is really poor?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently. Yeah, he slums it.
Yeah, definitely slums it.
Definitely slumming it. I've got some other facts on Spotify. 70% of their revenue, I don't know how the business works, goes to artists, of which the split is like 60% to labels and the rest to publishers.
And the rest to Ed Sheeran.
Yeah, right. Well, that's a funny point, actually, mate, because I've also read that Ed Sheeran, Stormzy, Dua Lipa and someone else are literally keeping the whole record industry afloat at the minute.
Right, okay.
But via their Spotify plays. I think I looked at the Dua Lipa YouTube video, and she had 1 billion plays.
Right.
So I mean, it's how many? So your 1 million plays of Flexin won't be.
Ah, it comes to about 200 quid, doesn't it?
Over 5 years as well.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so it is. Yeah.
But the stock market valuation of it's not really its true valuation, though, is it? I know it's never made a profit, but the idea is that people buy shares in it and it expands, and eventually it will make a profit, I suppose. So it's a bit of a weird one. It's sort of speculation again about how popular how good it could do in the future.
I thought its business model was also that the more people that subscribe premium wise means that more money goes to the artists, but the more subscribers they get. I thought that's how it
that's
worked.
What
that feels like that would make sense.
Yeah, I have a premium subscription with it. Obviously, as a DJ, it's helpless to no end. I'm using it every day.
Yeah, so as your DJ, is that, I suppose
for the sake of copyright things, I don't use it in public spaces.
But as like, I don't know, I've got a bit of a conflict with it because you don't get paid a lot, even though you do subscribe to
I can claim it back as research because that's what it is. So obviously, that immediately means that my opinion is redundant.
It's a necessary evil though, Spotify, isn't it? Like if it wasn't there, there'd be something else there, and people need to hear music to come and see you live, which is where you make money.
You know, we're
I guess, or not make money, but to try and stay afloat.
It's only the biggest artists who could refuse to be on there. Like Prince did until he died, and then they put all his music on there, and it's like, it's completely not what he wanted.
And you feel like the big artists who do that now, is it's more of a PR stunt.
Like, yeah.
We're refusing to be on Spotify.
Yeah, like Taylor Swift.
I will make a big deal about the day that it will we will be on there.
Yeah. There's a whole thing as well about Spotify and all the streaming services counting towards the charts, and how they decided that 100 plays of an album in full or 100 plays of a single would count as one sale. It's just like, I don't quite understand how
that just doesn't make sense. And we could, well, we say that because it fucked us when Big Balloon came out. And it stopped us from getting a top 100, didn't it? It was the streaming that did it. But all the other traditional, the more traditional things, we sold.
Yeah, if you look, you have to look deep into the internet and find out where we would have charted if it was all physical and downloads. Right, okay. It was high.
We'd be sitting pretty.
At least 84 or something like that.
And at most 84.
At the most 84.
If, as you say, the whole industry is being held up by three people that are just getting billions of plays.
Yeah, pretty much.
Then people don't deserve music. Yeah. And I'll happily say that.
Yeah, apparently last year was the best year for the music industry since 2010, revenue-wise.
But revenue, Spotify is...
Spotify dragging the money in, or just basically money into the music industry was the most. Yeah.
But the tagline from the music industry is, it's because of vinyl. Because it's cooler to say that.
Yeah.
It's cool to say music's doing well because vinyl sales are up. Vinyl sales are up on old vinyl sales.
Did you get more money for vinyl sales? I presume, obviously, sell a vinyl, you get 50% or whatever.
Well, the label will first. We will eventually.
We must get... Because a lot of our sales are vinyl.
Yeah.
A lot of listen to us are sort of traditional music fans.
Yeah,
or,
and CD as well. We sell plenty of CDs on tour.
Proper music fans who want a product.
Right, I found some stats for you. So what's this is the latest PRS statement. When's this from?
So it'll be from like the last 3 months last year, is it?
Okay, so it's
where the royalties are
September to
from.
December.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we had the track Big Balloon had 30,385 plays in the UK. And I made £2.21.
What did you spend it on?
Could you go to the bar, please, Rob?
Yeah.
spend your Big Balloon royalties.
Yeah.
Spoons. That's the song, not the album.
The song, yeah.
Okay.
Have you got a more obscure one?
Your more obscure song, okay. Yeah. What's the next one, Darren?
It's all obscure.
All obscure. What did the last track of the album get?
I want to get B-sides.
Oh, that's a good point, actually. Yeah,
the last track of the album. How many plays?
Well, that's another thing. When we were track listing Big Balloon...
Oh, my God, yeah.
We track listed it in mind for people listening to it on Spotify. We're like, well, the first five has to be the best five to some extent, even though two of the singles are track 7 and 8. But but we definitely felt that kind of... The momentum needs to be there from the beginning. Don't have a slow burner. Like, you know, if you want to try and shape your album... You know, to any writers out there, if you're shaping your album to be like a slow burner, something that builds up towards the end, don't bother. Just put your biggest song at the beginning, and then just.
I've got another good one here.
Go on. Yeah.
Similar kind of thing, you know. Cadenza, first track on that album. You know, get the bangers out of the way. In that same period, so September to December 2017, Cadenza had 1,487 plays, and I earned 9p.
There's got to be some benefits of your. Sure you must.
No,
have
this is the exposure,
fan,
you know.
A couple of fans.
There's one fan in Japan.
Have you got a fan in Japan?
Is that one fan or one play?
I think it's one fan. He's. I'm assuming it's a he. I should not assume. Makes an ass of you and me. There's one person in Japan that's definitely bought a couple albums. Like pre-order, I'm sure there's like pre-order.
I think there's. I really hope there's more than that. Like,
well, yeah, I know,
because we had a Japanese label.
I'd want to refer.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
You had a Japanese label.
Yeah, they licensed.
Don't let Duncan know that you got
ignorance is bliss. I'm loving the fact what I didn't know. I'm glad I didn't know about the £2.
I was quite shocked by that, actually.
Who are your Japanese label?
Who are your Japanese fans?
I remember seeing a picture. I remember seeing a picture of our album being sold next to an Everything Everything album when it was out of touch in the wild. Who's looked better?
Mm. Who's had the better review in the Times?
Who had album of the week in the Times? And...
I thought we were going to save that for a Christmas special.
Nope, there it is.
I thought it was going to be greatest hits. No, but I remember seeing a picture of one of our albums in a record store in Japan next to other albums that I knew were definitely being sold in that store. So that's, but as far as I'm aware, that's all I know in terms of us in, being in Japan. Or having, you know, any sort of exposure. Until, I don't know, about the label.
I don't know if they had them for the last album, but we definitely had them before. Oh, well.
Yeah. I hope there's more than one Japanese fan. I'd like to refer to as us several Japanese fans.
If you're listening, fan or fans, please get in touch.
Why is it called Chips of Chorlton?
Why is it called Chips of Chorlton?
Well, it's because you're the Chips of Chorlton, isn't it?
Because you're the Chips of Chorlton, mate. When you came up with the idea for doing this podcast, and it was, I'm very glad it didn't come from one of us. This is how I like to get involved in ideas. Like when we did the face-in video, and it was like, oh, we'll do this big wedding thing, but then Duncan's the bride. And I was a bit like, well, because I've not come up with it, I'll do it. And that's all right. A very depressing day in the end. However, moving on to it, Chips of Chorlton, we were in our local Spoons, the Sedgelin, having some excellent chips.
Yeah, you could, please, yeah.
Are we allowed to do that?
Of course. Well, yeah.
We don't.
Of course. I saw the glint in your eye of endorsement there.
We can't endorse our local Weatherspoons.
We can do whatever we want until someone tells us not to. I think that's the whole point of podcasts, yeah.
Top of the pops, right. Well, yeah, and we just decided that Chips of Chorlton was an interesting phrase to have around, especially around these parts of town, whilst we were having our excellent chips in Weatherspoons. And the idea was, as a turn of phrase, it felt like an excellent description of anyone who thinks they're it, or in our case, worthy of doing a podcast. So it's like, kind of, how dare we think ourselves so highly to do this? We must think we're the Chips of Chorlton. Yes. So that's where it comes from for the sake of the show. And then secondly, we realised that it could also tie in with some reviews about chips.
Yeah.
Possibly from chip outlets in Chorlton.
There are only two places that do good chips in Chorlton that we know of.
That's an interesting one. Ooh. Go on.
No, it's right though.
So we go two places.
Well, I know what one of them is, but what's the other one?
Weatherspoons, Dixie. That's it. No other places in Chorlton do good chips.
Actually, I was going to say the Beagle, but the Beagle's, it's all about what's on top of the chips. Really.
Exactly. Like,
yeah. What, cheeseburger?
Well, we're not counting that. Yeah. We're talking about the raw chip.
The chip is king.
Raw.
Raw.
Duncan, you look absolutely disturbed by what have you said. Challenge
well,
me.
Well, I don't know whether to interject here or not, because I've been thinking about the Dixie situation quite a lot, and it's not just me. We've all been there.
The last
on every
Dixie
day of the week at some point in our lives. I would say 4 days of the week, those chips are going to be on top. Another three of them, just it's potluck. You never know what you're going to get. Depends how pissed off they
guaranteed
are.
Guaranteed Tuesday night, Dixie chips.
Is there a routine to the days? Are they better on Sundays?
I'm not sure how much I want to talk about because I'm not sure how much I want to give people an insight into how sort of Dixie-related my life is. Yeah, how Dixie-related my life has been sometimes in the past. Because it's really not anything I'm proud of or anything that I would gleefully do.
It's
a means to an end.
But sometimes you say it like, I went to Dixie the other night, just got chips though. With a real crowd.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
My blimey. Expenses, like a pat on the back, which I've just given you.
Yeah, it's like, I'm getting there, guys. Yeah. It's not so bad. Veggie burger next. Veggie burger.
Soon it'll be nothing. I'll just walk in and I'll have nothing.
But I think for all intents and purposes, Spoons chips, I had some before we recorded this today because I thought I was going to meet you guys after the football game together.
Yes.
Then that didn't happen, so I was just a man on his own with a pint and a big bowl of chips and a gravy boat full of curry sauce. Of course, I was on my own, and it was the best. It's the best time ever. I had people kind of nodding me, because I was sat by the toilets. Of course, I was. Not that I'm a weirdo like that, but it was the only table free. But it's just when everyone walks past and sees one man and his chips, there's like there's always a nod of respect. Like, yeah, fair play, mate. It's great. But the gravy boat of curry sauce, no. Didn't need to season the chips or anything like that. My only criticism of them is that the chips are more expensive than the pint, and that's it.
Did you? Did so you? Did you got the gravy? The curry sauce today.
I got the curry sauce today.
But you got it separately.
Yeah, it comes separately in a boat.
Because last time we got it, it was on top, wasn't it? And it
yeah.
was...
Well, yeah. there was half and half. Yeah, but last time we got that, I probably had one of the worst hangovers of my life.
Yeah, it was really bad. I'm with you, Andy. I had to go to work 8 o'clock in the morning. I felt like, oh shit. I was really, I felt horrible. It was really bad.
It must have been the salt. Because like we said, we didn't season the chips. Mm. And we dipped them in the gravy boat experience. And it was brutal the morning afterwards.
It's nothing to do with the £10.
Yeah,
nothing to do with the £10.
I'm sure it was all the chips' fault.
All the chips.
Yeah, maybe they were a little bit. I don't know. No, I'm sticking with it. 10 out of 10, straight up. I think we're starting with this is the benchmark, and every chip that we review from now on, it's like, well, where is it on the Weatherspoon scale? Yeah.
However, we're not really reviewing those chips in this episode. We're reviewing Bar 480 in Chorlton.
Bar 480.
This chip talk.
So we went to watch Man United's 3 o'clock game against.
Okay, I need to step in a minute.
Okay,
you went to watch Man United.
You were there.
I mean, I came like 2/3 way to the second. Okay. I'm an Everton fan. I don't go to watch Man United 3 o'clock. I need to.
Yeah, he was there. Though.
Robin
wasn't there.
Yeah. I came in to see my friends who were in a pub
watching
football,
and then you cheered them on.
As if.
Come on, Manchester.
Come on. And I saw there was a big plate of chips and bread on the side.
It wasn't a plate, it was like a...
It was a fucking mountain.
It was like an industrial tray.
It's like a fucking Moses basket, wasn't it?
Was the bread buttered?
Yes. It absolutely was.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Okay. Quality of chip.
The quality of the chip...
They looked quite soggy from afar.
But they were.
Because I refused to go anywhere near it because I was getting OCD about it. And I was like, you could see how strategically placed the old men were in that pub. I mean, I've got a lot of time for Bar 480. It's like a little slice of Shagaloof right on Wilbraham Road. It really is. No, I was like... I feel like I'm in Brexit town here. Not that I like that idea, but I've definitely felt like I was in like a, you know... Like, what's the phrase when it's just full of expats in Spain or whatever?
Oh, Gibraltar.
Gibraltar. Yeah, I felt like I was in Gibraltar. Fuck it. I like the escapism of all that. That's fine.
It's got like random crap on the wall and that sort of vibe.
However, this chip system is kind of flawed because you've got all the buttered balms just there, kind of all wrapped up in the cellophane, and then you've got the chip tray that comes out just before half time, and all those guys are just sat around knowing that the chips are going to be there. They're just eating them loose. They're just eating them loose straight from their chair. And it's like, well, I feel like I'm
touching all the other ones.
Yeah,
as well,
and they're probably touching all the other ones, you know, with the big sausagey fingers and all that. But and that's fine. It's not fine though, because it feels like they're claiming the chips. And I feel like, well, if I went over there with a buttered balm, I feel like I'd be taking their chips.
Well, the chips might have filtered through their fingers and absorbed whatever it was that was on their fingers.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just.
But it was for me. It was the sort of the poetry of watching it happen, how it unfolded. Because I'd never been there before, and the communal halftime chip butty is an exciting thing to watch unfold, I think.
Okay.
So you the bread came out first, and then you were like, where? It was almost like a climax of to like where are the chips? There's all this bread, and where are the chips? And the chips came out, and it was really exciting. And then the condiments came out, and the condiment game was on absolute like top form as well.
Was it strong?
Was it as strong as my Dixie one?
Your Dixie condiment,
yeah. I always take my Dixie home, don't I? Sorry to get back on the Dixie.
Well, you do.
Track.
You always do.
I take it home.
You got your own Kona.
Yeah, I've got my chilled mayonnaise. I've got my own Kona. I've got my chilled sriracha, and I've also got my brand name ketchup.
Yeah, that is ridiculously good.
Yeah, no. But
do you mix any together? Would you make like a chili mayonnaise or?
No,
sriracha mayonnaise.
If the mayonnaise and the sriracha just happen to combine, then that's just the way
the cookie crumbles. Yeah,
it's the way the cookie crumbles, and I'll accept that. But no, I try and keep them separate. So what was there?
The condiment game. Well, there was a lot of thought.
Was there brown sauce?
There was brown sauce.
Not sure I can get that.
It was Daddy's as well. It wasn't even HP. It was Daddy's.
Were the chips any good? I think that's the question I want to ask. You know what I mean?
I think. But can you judge chips on their own?
Yes,
if they're meant to be put in a sandwich.
Oh, yes. I think a standalone chip.
If you say yes, then that's fine.
Yes, I'm saying yes.
5 out of 10.
5 out of 10, okay.
Five, that's the worst. Oof. That's neither here nor there.
If you're talking about the chip sandwich in itself, it's different. But just the chips, 5 out of 10. Chip sandwich,
okay.
because my first experience, 6.5.
To begin with, One thing I don't like about Record Store Day is the amount of red tape around the entire procession. If a band is going to release something, they have to know what they're going to release almost a year before it happens. If you're going to take into account recording time, mixing time, and then finally getting it in the queue to get printed on record, that's the big problem. Mm. There is a massive... Without just bitching about big labels, because I'm not really bothered about them otherwise, but they get to jump the queue when it comes to pressing things on vinyl. When it comes to smaller labels and indies, they have to wait in line, and it takes a long time to get those things through.
September,
yeah, and time and again we have felt, you know, because obviously we did it once, and I didn't really approve of the fact that we ended up doing double the amount of copies that we said we would do, because that completely defeated the point. Personally,
yeah,
it's a bit weird selling your Record Store Day release when you go on tour. It's like, it shouldn't really work like that.
True.
But at the same time, too many times I feel like we have looked at releases that we could do for Record Store Day. For example, we were going to do like a Riley one. We were going to do like a compilation of doing like 10 years of Riley sessions things like that. But then when you realise how long it's going to take to have those conversations with the BBC and all those other things, you need to be talking about that almost over a year in advance to when it's going to get released. And I think that's just a bit nuts. I think that takes away from it. And I don't think anyone really savours the records that come out on those days. I just don't.
No.
I mean,
I think you're right.
Andy, you've bought quite a few in the past.
Mm.
What would your thoughts be on that?
I'm not sure, really. Has Record Store Day not just worked? Is it not an experiment that just has worked?
So there's a really good article on The Quietus. Are we all fans of The Quietus, by the way?
Oh, yes.
Yes, of course. Really, really good. So hello, Joe.
I don't know.
Yes.
Anyone who's listening can Google the article.
Sorry, I mean, some crisps.
That's all right.
I might get a packet of crisps as well.
Yeah, it's all right. It's a fella from a record store shop who's slating it, basically.
Yeah.
The first one is the lead up to the day sees a dramatic fall in sales. So I can presume that people
are saving up for it.
Exactly. Yeah. People, that's record store. Record store coming. I'm not going to go to the record shop. I'm going to wait. Going to go on that day, and so be it.
Well, so the idea is that they're not buying any records in the lead up to Record Store Day.
Apparently, yeah. So they're saving the money, frankly, yeah. The second point is the underground or niche nature of indie shops is watered down by the absolute dross that is pumped out for Record Store Day. Justin Bieber's got something for Record Store Day this year.
I'm not surprised.
Has he? What's he got?
I don't know. Regardless of its quality, he should not be contributing to Record Store Day. Should he really?
But is it any good? Is it... Some sort of limited release thing that is valuable to his fans that might want to buy it on.
It could be.
Why not?
Don't exclude it.
We give a shit about his fans, though. You know
that Paramore remix was Record Store Day, wasn't it?
That was a Record Store Day.
That was really detrimental
for us in a way. I prefer that if that was a nationwide release.
Because you're frankly like, remembered for that release, aren't you?
Great idea, guys. We've got your Paramore remix is going to be on a Record Store Day release. Like, oh
yeah.
Could it not just be on like a normal release where there's loads more buyers and listeners? And
I get confused with Record Store Day and Bargain Bin sometimes. We've definitely
been in the Bargain Bin.
We've definitely been in the Bargain Bin at Piccadilly Records, I know that.
You definitely have, yeah.
Secondly, we've definitely done a cover. We did a 12-inch single release of a cover of Grace Jones's Slave to the Rhythm. We called it Slave to the Atypical Rhythm.
Yes.
The reason why we did that was because...
Wankers.
Wankers, basically,
we're wankers.
Well, like
that's what you said before, because we had to record it 9 months before Record Store Day.
Yeah,
and then when we actually started playing it, we could play it a lot better.
Yes,
you know, it was it was under rehearsed when we recorded it properly, and we recorded it live, which is why it might sound a bit scrappy.
might.
But
you played it a lot better live.
That's the nature of our band anyway. I think it always takes us 6 months of touring a song to really find its speed, if nothing else. But so we've done the Grace Jones, and we've also done this Paramore remix. Those are the only ones we've done that are released for that, right?
Yeah. We did talk about doing the Seal cover as well. at one point. But again, it was that...
Just a done idea, isn't it?
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a bit weird to watch kind of other bands sort of just go like... For example, this year, the band Wire are releasing their first three albums on 7-inch instead of 12-inch or something like that, right. In like a collection of sevens. And it makes sense for the fact that their songs on those albums are very short anyway, so you really could actually press some of those moments onto 2 7-inches.
Yeah.
So it's quite a cute idea. However, for anyone who's serious about their record collection, I can't stand a 10-inch. I can't stand a 7-inch. I just want 12-inches. You know, I mean, just give me, like, you know, I don't want to have this kind of higgledy-piggledy. I mean, that's no offence to Slug. It's a great album title. But I can't stand, like, a higgledy-piggledy record collection.
Yeah. Like, I think just, that's probably why 7s have kind of...
petered out a bit.
Yeah, they've gone out of fashion. Same with CDs, you know. Like, it's become more about the artwork, really. So many people buy 12-inches now just for the artwork. Yeah. And never actually listen to them. They get the download code and that's fine, but they've got the artwork and they've paid for the record. That's the main thing.
Andy, you have purchased Record Store Day releases in the past, sometimes with the idea that these things will, you know, grow in value. What's your experience with that?
Well, I've never bought and sold anything from Record Store Day, but I have gone to buy rarities that I think could just be rarer in the future. Mm. But it's still down to taste in a way.
Yeah.
Like I bought like a Genesis 7-inch, which they just released. Not Genesis, sorry, Jethro Tull, Ian Anderson 7-inch that he's released. Like old geezer who's just been like, fuck it, I'll release something. It's Record Store Day, why not?
Yeah.
And then I like Jethro Tull and Ian Anderson, so I'll just buy it and think that could, but maybe with a sense that I enjoy the music and also that it may accumulate value.
Yeah.
But not so much that, but it might be more of an antique or something to hold on to. But it's not really. If you want to go to Record Store Day,
good tunes or
no? It's just a Jethro Tull reissue of some live.
Oh, okay, right.
You know, so thick as a brick recording that they've done.
That's the next two criticisms of Record Store Day is that. You're going to get fans of bands who want to buy those records and they can't, so they're disappointed and they have to go on eBay, etc. and spend.
Does that still happen?
I would have thought. Probably if you go on eBay, there's people that will put their records or the records that they releases on sale, and you know they're going to pay thousands for it. And I suppose that on top of that, it's the disappointment of people who will get involved in Record Store Day and not get the records they want to get. I suppose
that must be really shit.
You know what I mean?
It's not totally sort of dependent on location as well. Like we're fortunate in the fact that we've got Piccadilly Records and we can go there and basically buy 90% of the records Record Store Day releases.
The whole Justin Bieber thing, I get what you're saying. In the long game, it seems a bit meaningless.
Yes.
What would be better is if they, I think it's better for spreading, like if the idea is that a Justin Bieber fan walks into a record shop to buy a Justin Bieber record and then they realise that they're actually in a record shop and then they look around and go, oh my God, there's all this other music. Look at this, Balearic, Krautrock, Prog, all these things. Well, that's not going to get them. Well, you know what's going to get them? The same thing that got me into bands, which is Q mixes. Do you remember the Q mixes? Christina Aguilera's Genie in a Bottle mixed with The Strokes' Hard to Explain. Saved my life.
You love that tune.
I love that tune. So my man on the inside, Patrick, Piccadilly Records, he said that they're anticipating that by far the most popular release on the day is going to be the St. Jude 10-year anniversary LP, even though it's actually, you can buy it right now, it's still in the, I went in there last week to see him and it was, you know, it was in there already, so I don't, is it part of the, I mean, none of us have got our phones out, so we're not going to find out, but he said that, like, that's by far kind of like the big, that's the big thing happening right now.
Okay.
It's an interesting one to see a 10-year anniversary come up, but it's still, I don't know, it's a fairly contrived decision. I love the billboard they had put up in Piccadilly Station.
Oh, with the independent review.
With the independent review just saying, no one will be talking about this album in 9 months' time or something
in 10 years.
In 10 years?
Yeah, it says no one will be talking about this album in 10 years.
Who wrote that? Was that
I don't know.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So they put that on this 10
year anniversary. Big respect to them for that.
Yeah, big respect to, you know, putting the money out on that.
Yeah.
Especially. That's great. We were there for some of those shows. We supported them at a time when, obviously, it wasn't what we wanted to be doing ourselves.
No, and it wasn't Dutch Uncles either.
It wasn't Dutch Uncles. It was a completely different band that, even though we named 20 minutes ago, we shall not be naming now. You're so close, Andy. But you could tell that there was something special going on with those shows. Oh, so I totally understand it. Yeah. Like there was something that it wasn't what we wanted, but I really enjoyed sort of seeing those that kind buzz. Of shows happen. Yeah. Like Live Cafe, Late Lounge. Where else? Jabez Clegg. We played with them there at Jabez Clegg.
Night and Day as well.
At Night and Day. Like all those shows.
Like that buzz, you know, has just continued for them, you know, in Manchester.
In Manchester.
Yeah. At first, it felt like a saddened sort of indictment of the fact that the biggest thing is just going to be a Manchester band, you know, in terms of like the biggest sale in Manchester. But rightly so, I think. It is a special album.
Is it good?
It's a fine
is it a good album? St. Jude by the Cortinas. No. Is it good?
I think.
I would say no.
why would you say no?
It doesn't surprise me, Robin.
Lyrically, you know, there's moments where I can really understand why they got that appeal.
But ultimately, lyrically is what made it. Like he wrote about things that people could relate to.
But still, but it's
the ultimate reason in pop music. Why?
Yeah, but they're marketed in the right way as well. You know, the lad rock era was in full force. You had The View and the fucking Pigeon Detectives and all that shit, and they came in at that time, and it was like.
I mean, in context of the Pigeon Detectives, I mean, Cortinas are fucking king.
Cortinas are definitely better.
I would disagree and say that I think Frey is the whole package. He represents everything. It's the whole philosophy behind it all.
Yeah.
And I understand what you're saying about the music side of it, but
the music is irrelevant almost.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
It's just like.
The music is a backdrop to what he wants to say.
Yeah, it sounded like Libertines, but not as interesting.
I don't know. They're the best unsigned band I've ever seen.
For me, maybe because I get very sentimental about, especially when something gets put on vinyl. Like whenever we've toured with bands that, you know, it's been a really, you know, significant or enjoyable tour, like I'll buy all the records and it'll sort of make a bit of a collection. Like Wild Beasts, for example, I remember at the end of that tour, I was like, right, I'm buying all these albums on vinyl right now because I want this. Yeah. This is a postcard kind of moment, and I get quite sentimental about it. So I understand how significant the St. Jude re-release is.
Yeah. Although, for us, that was a horrible time.
For us, it was a horrible time, but I still remember how special Cavorting sounded. A song that was recorded in Cholton. It was recorded at Airtight Studios just down the road. Like, it's so weird when, like, obviously localising it all makes it different as well. But, I think for the moments that are on those records, like, when Not 19 Forever came out, I was so frustrated that they made such a good song with literally the change of one finger on a guitar. I was like, fuck you. How have you done that? What's that all about? What was it, like an A to an A7 to maybe a D? It's like, two finger movements in that whole song. And then, as if they knew that Man United were going to win a 20th. Like, bloody hell.
They knew.
What kind of foreshadowing was that? It's like, that's incredible.
That's a good...
That was like, it does not get any sweeter than that.
The headlines were the de facto support band.
Yeah, it got to a point where we were turning down support slots with them because we knew what we had to go through to start doing it after a while.
To the fucking back of people's heads.
It got to a point where people weren't even looking at us.
It was so demoralising. We were 19 at the time, and it was like, what is the point in this?
Yeah.
It was...
I commend our self-righteousness to be consistently saying to ourselves, it's they who are wrong. And that's not to say that we were wrong.
But
our spirit was infallible about it. It's like, no, what we're doing is fucking genius. And these guys don't have a fucking clue. Like,
Jetson, fucking Jetson, 5 minutes.
That's the tune.
If you can't get down in 7/4, five
minute jazzy 7/4.
I'll tell you what, nobody will talk about this in 10 years.
But they'll be talking about the palindromic chorus in Doppelganger. 21-8, better believe it.
Is that why they asked? They kept asking us to support them?
Because I don't know. It's
because we were just...
I don't know.
I don't know. Like,
it's because
whenever I met Conan the guitarist, he was always really nice, and he apparently really liked the band. So I don't know whether he.
Oh no, I've had those moments. I've bumped into Frey, like, you know, around town, where he's just like, after a few to the good, he'd just be like, "Yeah, I know we're doing all right, but you guys." We're never going to be Dutch uncles, though, are we? And he always kind of tried to say it in a way that was like, you know, like as if as
I'm
it.
Fucking thankful for that.
I was like, I think he was holding back off that last bit, but he was always saying it in a way to say that we have a certain relationship with our fans that he could never have. It and in my head, I was like, oh, just fuck off, mate. Come on. Last time we spoke, I was bragging to you that we'd had 2,000 MySpace players in a week, and then you showed me a gold record. That actually happened. Well, what a time to be alive.
So it was 10 years since your first gig.
The first Dutch Uncles gig.
The first Dutch Uncles gig, which was at the Night and Day supporting...
Metronomy.
Metronomy and...
Superfresh Power Squad.
Who the fuck are they?
They were sort of a goldy-looking chain.
They were a conglomerate of DJs and wannabe MCs that saw Goldie Looking Chain and saw a quick book. and two of them had vocoders. Well, I say that. Okay. Like, Will Tramp, the notable disco DJ of town.
Yeah, he's a dude.
He was one of the vocoder guys, and they did a cover of Blackstreet No Diggity. And I commend his performance, actually. I think it's the only gig they ever did. But what I will remember from that gig was all the people at the front of the... Because, I mean, it was at Night and Day. It was a filmed gig for Channel M. There was a camera tower in the middle of like the audience area.
Oh, yeah. And that venue only 100 people out of the capacity of that
venue. Exactly. Yeah. Like, so there was not a lot of people at that gig. And the people that were there were all wearing Superfresh Power Squad t-shirts. I don't know where they got... I mean, yeah, that's a militant fandom going on there. But they were so disappointed in us. It was a horrible show.
Was it?
Was horrible.
I mean, don't remember.
No, it was horrible.
I remember Homeless Joe being at the front. That's something.
Homeless Joe. Our friend Homeless Joe, we call him Homeless Joe. He's actually a professor. Professor Homeless Joe.
He has a home.
Yeah, he's doing all right for himself. In fact, we should get him to do some chip reviews, because he's been doing some noodle cup ones. In the form of haikus, and it is spellbinding. I'd say follow him, but I can't remember his Twitter handle. So, sorry, Joe, if you're listening.
10 years of Dutch Uncles. What do you both remember as the highlights?
Highs and low.
And the low light. Actually, forget the highlights. The low light.
I'm going to pick an interesting low light. I'm going to pick something that was a bit like, I could see everything unfolding before me and could do nothing about it. So, what's the year? Probably about 2011, maybe 2012, when we signed with Memphis. Cadenza's kind of on, you know, like the Cadenza album's been recorded.
Yeah.
Fragrance been out. Zane Lowe's played it about 5-6 times on Radio 1, and it's like, holy shit, this thing looks like it's got some legs here. This looks pretty good.
You're going to be massive, aren't you?
Yeah, like, you think, your first release... No, wait. Your first release on an actual label. Yeah. Because before that, we had a Hamburg label, and that's like saying you got a long-distance girlfriend. No one believes you, and they're right, because it's not right. It's not real. I mean, it was, but it wasn't. We didn't know what was going on.
When we told people in Marple that we were massive in Germany...
Yeah.
You know...
You were lying.
Yeah,
we were lying.
Anyhow, shit gets a bit too real. Zane Lowe wants to do an interview for his website.
Yeah.
We show up, and maybe it was just because he was also interviewing the Go team that day. Maybe it was that. But we get invited to go and do that for his thing. It's a very interesting situation. You have one sofa and a chair. How are five people all going to sit down on a sofa? You sit down on the sofa the way you walk into the room, I suppose. It's a bit like The Usual Suspects. There's no... How do you display dominance on a sofa with five people? You tell me. Anyhow, the moment comes to it. Camera's on. This is it. Interview time. Who sat right in the middle? No offence to him. Sweet little Peter. Like... No. He will be part of future podcasts. This is not a knock on him at all. Like he didn't want to be here today. He just didn't want to be here. That's fine. Like he will be involved in later episodes. However, Zane was convinced that he was the lead singer and asked him every question. Pete doesn't know what to say about half the things that I've written about or you've written about. Like, this is the thing, but I'm not happy with that situation either. Yeah, yeah. I would love it if any one of us could actually say, you know, but you know, be the spokesperson for this, because just because me and you are the writers, I'm looking at Robin, by the way, just because me and you are the writers doesn't mean that we should have to be the spokesperson for everything that happens at the same time. Yeah. But it was a fucking nightmare. And I spent half the time just watching all these questions come towards Pete. And I was like, Pete doesn't know the answer. This is going terribly.
He's going to black it.
He'll black it. He'll go with it. He won't just say, you need to ask this guy that's sat on the edge of the sofa and very nervously, biting all of his nails.
It's just because like we've grown up, you know, watching MTV2 every day at school and college.
He was a legend.
He was like...
He was a legend.
It was such a big thing that being interviewed by him.
The fact that he just, like, you know... And that's not, it's not Zane's problem that he didn't know who would be who.
Yeah.
It was an introduction. It was just like, fuck! How the fuck did we fuck up five people sitting on a sofa?
It was ludicrous. We looked like it.
That's what happened. We fucked up five people sitting on a sofa.
Okay.
And it all went downhill from there.
It really did.
It really did because Zane's producer didn't like the Cadenza video. No. And then we never got played on Radio 1
again. We looked smug.
Yeah,
his producer said we looked smug in the Cadenza video.
And he's exactly right.
He's not right.
He's not right. No, we looked uncomfortable.
No, we looked fat.
Yeah, we looked fat and uncomfortable.
And that's it. Thanks for listening to the first episode of Chips of Chorlton. Thanks for Andy, Rob and Duncan for joining me. Keep your eyes and ears peeled for a future episode where we'll probably be discussing how much of a gobshite Morrissey is. Bye for now.